Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Sayward, part of the Missed Apex Motorsport Podcast Network. Check out eRadio Show for Formula E News, Missed Apex W for coverage of the new W Series, and fascinating F1 facts for bite-sized F1 trivia. I'm your host, Richard Spannersready, and producer of Missed Apex Podcast. We're an independent podcast produced in this podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. Today, I'm joined in the shed by F1 media legend Joe Sayward. How's it going, Joe?
Very good, actually, yeah. It's a little cold here in Monte Carlo, as you can see from my garb. It's not entirely sort of bikini weather. Not that I would be wearing a bikini, but
thanks you, Joe, for that.
But at least it's not raining.
So you're not in the shed with me. We can reveal that and drop that facade. You are in Monaco with that beautiful backdrop. Can you describe the scene behind you for the audio listeners?
Well, I'm not actually in Monaco. I'm in a place called La Turbie, which is on the big mountain behind Monaco. And if you look here, this thing here is called the Tête du Chien, the dog's head. And that is the big rock you see behind Monte Carlo. So I'm basically sort of 10 minutes drive away. Sitting on a terrace in a nice evening. I have a glass of rosé to keep me happy. And the only thing is I don't have enough sunshine. So.
Oh, well.
But, you know, life is not so bad. You know, on the Côte d'Azur, you know how it is.
I know. Our hearts were going to be bleeding for you in your elite journalistic motorsport world. It's the Monaco Grand Prix coming up this weekend. Is this a highlight for you? Forget about the controversy of the racing and whether or not it's good on-track action. For you personally, is this a good weekend to attend?
Yeah, I mean, it's Monaco. Monaco is difficult. The facilities aren't as good as other places. The traffic's can be very dodgy. People are very, very busy. The paddock's full of hangers-on. But it is Monaco, and there's nothing like Monaco. And people who say it's a boring race haven't been here, because you go and watch the guys going around the track here, and you always just go, wow, I couldn't do that. And that's what you have to understand about it. You know, if you want to have racing where they overtake three times every corner, this is not the place to do it. But if you want to see drivers at their absolute finest, this is a place to do it. So, you know, obviously qualifying is important because overtaking is very, very difficult, but it's not impossible. And I don't know, we've seen races here in the past. I remember in 97 or something like that, Olivier Panis coming from 13th on the grid to win. You know, it was okay, it was a little damp, but it could be damp this year, to be quite honest, although the weather forecast for Sunday is sunny, Saturday is rainy, so qualifying could be in the rain, which would be entertaining because we could have a ridiculous grid, which might be quite fun.
I would settle for that. If you said to me, yes, it's going to have to be a dry, not that interesting race on Sunday, but we do have a dramatic mixed up qualifying on a Saturday. I think I can get on board with that, especially if it throws up, I don't know, Ricardo up on pole randomly or something like that.
And meanwhile, in your dreams, yes.
Well, it would certainly be nice.
I would love to see Daniel up there on pole position, but you know, there's 20 guys, all of whom are, well, almost all of who are top quality racing drivers. And I think that, you know, whoever gets around, you know, you have to remember here, the most important thing at Monaco is not to make a mistake. If you make mistakes, you hit the wall. If you hit the wall, you're nowhere. So you can start from the back of the grid. Max Verstappen, I think, did it last year. And it's, you know, it's a tough race. But at the same time, you have to remember also that Monaco is, in many ways, the spirit of Formula One. It's where the glamour comes from. And let's face it, you know, who doesn't think the Côte d'Azur is glamorous? Now, there are more Russians here than you can imagine. And the Chinese are moving in too, because they all think it's a glamorous place to be. Obviously, they haven't been to Sochi, which is the Russian equivalent of Monte Carlo in a fashion. But, you know, this is just a sexy place. And it has been a sexy place for 70 years. And the first Monaco Grand Prix was, in fact, actually, it wasn't 70 years. It was 90 years ago this year. So it's an anniversary too.
What a fascinating fact, Joe.
I can tell you a lot more about it, because the first winner was, of course, William Grover Williams, who was a fabulous character, who was a secret agent in World War II and was parachuted into France and was actually murdered, or executed rather, as a spy.
Is that in your book, Grand Prix Saboteurs?
It is his story, yes, indeed.
Yeah. Well, you can get lots of fascinating F1 facts from Joe with his bathroom book, Fascinating F1 Facts, or you can listen to that, or you can listen to me narrating those facts on our new podcast feed by searching Fascinating F1 Facts on your podcast player of choice, or going to MissedApexPodcast.com and looking for it in the show's tab. Joe, you claim to me on Grand Prix weekends that you don't get involved in the partying because you're working far too hard. Is Monaco an exception to that?
No, not really. The only thing about Monaco is that you have practice on Thursday and you have practice on Saturday, and Friday is, it's not a day off, but basically Formula Ones don't go out. There are Formula 2, Formula 3. To be honest, I haven't looked at the schedule, but there will be races on Friday. And so there is a sort of an extra day. And that goes, historically, that's because the Thursday used to be the Ascension Day holiday. So it was a national holiday and everyone would basically... the Friday would take the day off and have a good time. So, you know, it was in that era, it was a little bit different as a sort of party place to go. It still is. There's a lot of partying goes on, but it just depends what you have to do. There's a lot of people who just come to party. But sadly, the internet, blessed though it is, it means that the journalists generally work a lot harder than they do always. So in the old days, we had a lot more time. If you had one deadline a week, can you imagine just having on Tuesday morning, you had to deliver X thousand words, which is really easy. And then you have Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. You can probably not do a hell of a lot, which I did for many years. You know, I'd sort of sit in my hammock in the south of France and I would not actually have to work much. But, you know, you have to keep traveling to races. That's the other downside. Downside, upside, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, we're always traveling as well.
And I suppose nowadays, if you don't get your content out quickly, you get swarmed by people who weren't at the track reporting on stuff. And I know your views on those people, on me people, are well documented. So we won't provoke you any further.
No. There's nothing wrong with people wanting and having the ambition and the desire to be Formula One reporters. I like that. But basically, if you want to be a Formula One reporter, get up and go and do it. And there are plenty of guys who are doing it now, guys and girls actually, who are making it happen. And that's the difference. I have an objection to people who are making it happen from home when they're not really. All they're doing is taking everyone else's work. So, you know, if you arrive in Formula One and you have no money and you're struggling, we'll look after you somehow or other. If we know about you, we'll look after you.
Right, I'll get on a plane. I'll see you there, Joe. I'll see you for Germany.
Well, as long as you got the pass, I can see you. If not, you haven't. You know, no.
I'll hold you to that. There's obviously we'll be talking about what's coming up in the calendar, a few surprising changes and upcoming events. But firstly, the Monaco Grand Prix is going to be a little less Formula One. Unfortunately, we woke up to the news this morning that Niki Lauda had passed away, and you wrote a beautiful piece on your blog that people can find by going to by searching for Joe Bloggs F1. Obviously, for me as a 38-year-old, I didn't experience Niki Lauda as a racer, but for me, he was a character that brought post-race interviews to life. He was just a very honest, funny, frank guy. When everybody else around him was being quite corporate, Niki Lauda was such a character.
Absolutely. I mean, Niki, there are no other Nikis in the world. The closest thing is Helmut Marko, who's a friend of Niki's. And, you know, they kind of grew up together. So I think that, you know, that sort of blunt Austrian who just tells the truth. Sometimes their view of the truth is a bit interesting. But, you know, Niki was... How can you describe Niki Lauda in less than three quarters of an hour? You know, it's impossible. Niki Lauda was a legend. I mean, I grew up watching Niki coming back from effectively being dead to racing 6 weeks later. And you can't, you know, you can read about it, but to actually have seen it at the time was just sort of wow. And I saw Niki race at Silverstone in 79. I saw him race a few other times in the McLarens later on. And then I got to know him. I didn't always like him, by the way, I have to say. He was not an easy character, but over time, you got to appreciate him. And in fact, it was very strange. The other day, I was looking at my diary for some reason from 1984, and I joined Autosport, whenever it was, September, October 1984. I joined Autosport staff, and it was really exciting, you know. And a week later, I was sent to the Royal Lancaster Hotel in London, and my job was to interview Niki Lauda, the world champion. The previous week, he'd become world champion. And to this day, for the life of me, I don't understand what the hell they were doing sending me to interview. I was completely in awe of this bloke. I'm sitting next to Niki Lauda, you know. Yeah. Wow. Legends. You use the word legend very lightly nowadays, but Niki Lauda was and always will be a real legend, because you know what he did and where he came back from. He came back from just every kind of possible disaster you can think of. You know, his airline, which is a completely different side of the business, but you know, away from the business, he ran a fantastically successful series of airlines. But he had to deal at one point. He had to deal with a crash which killed more than 200 people. And you know, if you ask Niki, the biggest setback in his career, he would not say crashing at the Nürburgring in 76 was the worst thing in his life. The worst thing in his life was his airline killing 200 people. But it was Boeing. The airplane failed, and Niki forced them to admit it publicly, because otherwise his airline would have been destroyed. And that's Niki. I mean, Niki was just blunt and difficult and fantastic. And in recent years, he mellowed a lit quite a lot. And that was a little bit due to Toto Wolff, who was a very good influence on Niki. And I think that, you know, Niki just became the sort of elder statesman of Formula One. And, you know, if you wanted to know the truth, you went to Niki, and Niki would pretty much tell you that this is what's going on. And these people are idiots, and these people is bullshit, and, you know, sorry, bleep for the kids. But that's Niki. Niki was a bit like Gunter Steiner. His language was perhaps not always perfect for the younger generations. But hell, what are we talking about? Younger generations know these words from the age of about 9 onwards these days, don't they?
They certainly do. It might seem like a slightly shallow question, but for a lot of my generation and below, the film Rush is our biggest insight into his racing career. Do you know what his reaction was to that film? Because the character of Niki Lauda in that film was certainly very endearing. I'm wondering what impression he had of it.
Well, there's lots of very long stories about Rush. But basically, Daniel Bruhl, I think his name was, did an amazing job playing Niki. Because you looked at this and you saw, oh my God, that's Niki. as a young man. And he was just extraordinary. I mean, that's really a great piece of acting. I thought he deserved an Oscar, but what do I know, in the film world. But I thought he was absolutely remarkable. But, you know, Nicky was different. He was another, he came from another world, you know, a little bit. And the movie was, okay, it wasn't entirely factually correct, but it was close enough, to get the story across. The story of how the movie was made is another, you know, Nicky had agreed to do the deal with somebody else, but then Hollywood came along and Nicky said, ah, I take the Hollywood money. You know, that was Nicky. That was pragmatism. And I know that to be true because I was going to write the script on the other movie, the original one. So, you know, perhaps they, I don't know if they did a better job, whatever, but, you know, it's kind of funny.
The chat room saying, just please do tell long stories about Rush. I don't think they mind at all, Joe.
Okay.
Oh, in fact, before you do, I'll just say that Critch is also asking, do you have any, you know, good or funny memories of Nicky Lauder personally?
Well, Nicky was brilliant. And at the same time, he was a pain in the neck. And I mean, I was interviewing Toto recently. I don't know if the people who read Grand Prix Plus magazine will have read the interview with Toto, which is a remarkably unusual interview, about Toto and the way he manages things and life. But Toto was talking about when Nicky and he first started working together at Mercedes, they didn't get on at all. And it was basically because Nicky wasn't a team player. He was me, which is what racing drivers are. And racing drivers have to be like that. Otherwise, you know, it's all very well saying, I'm a team player. You know, fundamentally, they're selfish. And Toto was sort of trying to get Nicky to become a team player. And so he fined him €50 every time Nicky said I rather than me. Sorry, rather than we.
Yeah.
And it worked. And after, you know, because Nicky, you know, he knew the value of a euro. And after a few months, they had a meeting at the team and I think they just won the first world championship, probably 2014, something like that. And Nicky said to the team, this victory means more to me than all my drivers' world championships. And that was it. After that, Nicky Lauder was, as far as the team was concerned, Nicky Lauder was the inspiration of that team. And I think you need to understand how important Nicky is for Mercedes. He is, although Toto is a very, very good leader, Nicky, to a large extent, was the figure they all looked up to. He was the chairman of the company. And, you know, I don't think necessarily it will impact upon the performance of the team, just in case people start thinking it will. But Nicky was the leader. Nicky was the inspiration. Nicky was this incredible legendary figure. And I think Toto said it really well today. He tweeted about what Nicky meant to the team. And he said, you know, it was a privilege to work with him and to be his friend. But it wasn't easy. And, you know, that's the thing about Nicky. Anyway, going back to the movie thing, it was originally a project, that an Austrian producer was going to make. And Nicky agreed, yes, let's do that. But the Austrian couldn't raise any money for it. And so instead he made a series of documentaries about Austrian sporting stars who came back from nowhere. They came back from serious injuries and had become stars again. And one of these people was a countess who'd had a skiing accident and one day literally sort of sat around for 5 years, not being able to do anything. One day just got up and sort of walked off and could do it again. Weird, strange story. And she actually was, and I can't remember all the names necessarily, but she was the mother-in-law of a Hollywood writer. And the Hollywood writer saw this show, documentary, and saw the documentary about Nicky and thought, oh, I can do something with that Nicky Lauder. And that's how it happened. And that's how, his name was Morgan, but I can't remember the first name, which is probably, he'll be deeply insulted by that. But sorry, Peter, I want to say Peter. Anyway, he was married to an Austrian countess. And that's how the whole thing ended up in sort of Ron Howard and Hollywood land. And Nicky being Nicky just sort of said, ha, I go with this because the money's better. And, you know, that's Nicky. And so that's how Rush got made. And the irony is that the company that made Rush actually went bust. And it's all back in the hands of the Austrian producer, who actually acquired everything afterwards. So he owns all the rights to Rush, which is actually, you know, I thought Ron Howard did a really good job on it. And I think they portrayed Nicky in a very good way. I thought their portrayal of James as well was James Hunt, was brilliant. So all in all, I think it was a terrific movie. It's just that, you know, Hollywood sometimes, I don't know, audiences haven't responded in the way they should, or what one would believe they would, to Formula One movies. I think that's because we need to win America over more than we have.
It was a fantastic movie, and I can just hear it coming out of every pore of your being, how fond you are of Niki Lauda. I think it's fair to finish up by saying there's not going to be another one, is there? And Joe is raising his glass. Niki Lauda, sadly, passed away. That's the news we woke up to this morning. Let's move on. Moving away from F1, just a teeny tiny bit, I've had a message from Squire in our Patreon Slack group who said, Joe, should McLaren be applauded for diversifying and trying different events, a bit like when F1 stars did that a bit more often in the olden days? And, like Alonso tweeted, if you try and do difficult things, you're going to fail sometimes. Or should they concentrate on F1, even though they aren't in a position to compete with the top three teams in the current formula? This is, of course, reference to the fact that Alonso and McLaren tried to qualify for the Indy 500 and surprisingly failed to do so. Joe, a surprise for you?
No, not really.
I think there's a fire in your background, Joe. The building.
It's a cleaning thing going on.
That's a lot of fuss for a cleaning vehicle.
Yeah, but they have, you know, health and safety. You've got to have reversing noises these days. So I guess it's somebody cleaning. I don't really care, to be honest. To go to the question about Indianapolis, did I think it was a good idea? No, I didn't. And I made that point to the team. They didn't like the fact that I made that point to the team. They thought I was being negative and a bunch of other things. And sadly, I've been proved to be correct. I just think they did it all wrong. I think they made a lot of bad strategic decisions. They blamed it all on Bob Fernley, which is probably not the right thing to do. Because it wasn't Bob Fernley's fault. Bob Fernley was hired to do a job, but somebody made the decision to go out there and make, you know, strategically go to Indianapolis. Why? Because they're trying to sell cars in America, but America's already their biggest car market. So they didn't need to do it. They needed to concentrate on getting Formula One right. And right now, this week, they're fourth in the Constructors' Championship. But if you look at the championship points, there's 10 points and there's five teams within that bracket. So this weekend, if they have a bad weekend, they could be eighth. So, you know, they're not doing well in Formula One. You know, they're doing okay this season. The car's not bad, but it's not great.
So when you approach the McLaren hospitality, are you going to, you know, say, I told you so, you fools? Now you listen to Joe.
No. It's unseemly.
Is it? Okay.
To do that. But there's no question I did. And they know that. And, I shan't be going to McLaren Hospitality, to be quite honest. I can't be bothered because, people who stick around this board a long time see a lot of stuff. Okay? And you see mistakes being made. And I've seen a lot of mistakes being made by a lot of people. And McLaren just made the same mistakes I've seen before. And that's what I was telling them. I said, don't do this. You need to focus on Formula One. Formula One's the most important thing. And actually, the board of directors was against going to Indianapolis. They were turned around. They were swayed, saying this is a good idea. Well, it wasn't a good idea. What's happened is completely negative for McLaren. It just casts the team in a bad light. You can throw somebody under the bus and blame it on them, but the fundamental problem is that somebody decided to do something that was not sensible.
Well, we've got a chat room comment, and you can join our live stream by searching for Missed Apex Podcast on YouTube. You can watch live and you can comment live, like Artemy X saying, I was just reading the story about McLaren's Indy 500 failures and it seemed like a comedy of errors. And Go Harry Flatters would like to ask you, Joe, in the wake of Bob being made the scapegoat for the Indy calamity, is it just coincidence that Alonso seems to leave a trail of upheaval behind him? Quoting Spygate, Crashgate, Honda, exactly. So I don't know, is there something about Alonso's effect on an organization?
No, I don't think that's fair. Alonso doesn't help matters sometimes. He's not a very good team builder. He wants what he wants, which is to win, which is normal for a racing driver, but he has a way of disrupting things. But I don't think he did anything wrong in this case. You know, he has an ambition. He wants to win the Indy 500. The mistake that was made was last 2 years ago, they went to Indianapolis in an Andretti car and they did well. If you look at the, go onto the internet and look how Connor Daly did in a one-off with Andretti. Okay. He's right up there at the front. And if they were smart, if you have to go to Indianapolis to you know, win the championship, win the race with Fernando Alonso, do it with a team that knows how to win. Don't do it with a whole bunch of people thrown together. It's not a team. It's a bunch of people thrown together with engineering support from Carlin, who qualified one out of four cars. That's not necessarily Carlin's fault. They're new to the game. But, you know, Indianapolis is not easy. And that's the point I was trying to make. And I think there was a sort of a sense of arrogance at McLaren, thinking that going to Indianapolis was easy because it went so well in 2017. It only went so well in 2017 because they allied to a team that knew what they were doing. And if McLaren continue, I very, very much doubt that Alonso will be with McLaren Indianapolis next year. I can't imagine why you'd do it. It's too much of a risk. You just go and get a job with Penske. You go and get a job with Andretti. You go to Ganassi. You'd find a way of getting a deal.
Well, let's bring that back to F1 then, Joe. What do McLaren do now? They get their head down. They kind of sort of swallow their pride a little bit and concentrate on the job at hand. Perhaps not the best car suited for Monaco, but going through to the European season. I mean, they have shown flashes this season that they could be challenging for that kind of best of the rest spot. They're certainly bothering Renault.
But so has everybody else. Toro Rosso haven't produced the results that the car is capable of doing. But if you go through, you have Haas, you have Renault, you have Racing Point, you have McLaren, and you have Toro Rosso. You have five teams, all of whom could end up at the end of this season in fourth place. And that is a serious risk for McLaren. McLaren is not that far ahead of everybody else. They're not challenging the big teams at all. So let's get real here. Let's be sensible about things. And let's say, you know, McLaren, what is their core business of McLaren? It's an interesting argument nowadays. It used to be Formula One. This is a person doing lunatic things on those hills up there in the twisty roads, that bike noise you can hear. And there's lots of bunches of flowers on the roads around here because too many bikers do this stuff. Anyway, we'll have to see how it turns out. But the McLaren car is half decent. It's not bad, but it's not a car that will win or challenge for anything. And in the overall scheme of things, it's not up there. The irony, of course, it's not up there with Red Bull Honda. And of course, McLaren fell out with Honda and dropped them. So I think we'll have to see how they do. And at the end of the year, it's a better time to judge them. But I do think that going to Indianapolis and screwing up as badly as they have has damaged the McLaren brand. Now, they won't like me saying that, but to be honest, tell me another story that's true.
Should we move up the grid a little bit? Ferrari, who...
Ow, ow, meow, meow.
Why? We're going up the grid. We're all right. That is a fact that Ferrari are up the grid from...
Yes, I know it's a fact, but it's still a bit of a meow. Anyway, go on.
Well, a little bit, but they're not as far up the grid as they potentially should be.
No, they're not. That's also true.
And I think this would be a good stage to sort of stop and ask you how you think Binotto is settling in. Is he suffering from inheriting a system that isn't his? Or is he, in your opinion, taking it in a different direction the team isn't used to? Why did that early potential back away?
Well, settling in is interesting because he's been there for about 20 years.
Well, in the role, Joe.
Yeah, in the role. But, you know, I think he's doing okay. I think the problem is that the car was... It was the fastest car in testing. There's no question about it. But they didn't seem to be able to follow it up. And I think Mercedes found some things. And particularly in the last race in Spain, Mercedes arrived with a bunch of updates. and they blew the socks off Ferrari. Now, the socks are somewhere in the trees near Barcelona, and they have to get together and take that hit and then find a way of fighting back. And that's tough because, you know, that was Mercedes at their absolute most powerful, sort of saying to everybody, yeah, yeah, if you want to beat us, you're going to have to do this. Now, I happen to think that this year, unusually, because Mercedes isn't usually very good at Monaco, but I think this year the car will be good at Monaco because it's good in low-speed corners. Normally, you would say Red Bull here, but Red Bull are not confident here. And Ferrari, I think, sadly, we're looking at sort of, I doubt they'll even make the podium
here. Really?
Oh, no, I seriously don't think they're going to make the podium here. So we'll see. A lot of it depends on qualifying. And a lot of it depends on, you know, maybe they've got some updates that we haven't seen in action yet. You know, this is the way of Formula One now. Updates are coming all the time. And, you know, from one race to the next. Now, I think Mercedes pulled out a pretty major, a major lead in Barcelona, which is where we expected Ferrari to do well because that's where they did well in pre-season. But that shows you what 3 months in Formula One is like. You know, these things are not standing still. So, to be quite honest, we haven't got a clue what's going to happen. we'll go down on Thursday and see the first day. Hopefully, people will be well behaved because the mechanics quite enjoy Thursday evening in Monaco, which is sort of party night because you have the day off the following day. But and they don't get many party nights, to be fair. But Saturday, the serious business will begin, and we'll see. We'll see who is going to win, and then we'll be off to Canada, you know, and a completely different racetrack and a completely different set of circumstances may prevail.
So do you think Ferrari are looking at Canada already? At the very least, are Ferrari still fighting for this season development-wise? Do you think they're still trying to make that gap up?
Of course they are, but are they going to be able to do it? I don't know. And how do we know? One of the things that's key is the psychology of the racing team. And one of the things that Ferrari is very good at is panicking and listening to the Italian press, which they should not do, but they have done for years. And this is one thing that they had for the last couple of years, which was totally bonkers. But it was one way of dealing with it, which is just we'll ignore the press completely, everybody. Mainly, they were trying to ignore the Italian press. It didn't work. It just made them everybody hate them, you know. But the fact was that they were trying to protect the team. And if you look at the history of Ferrari and the way it's successful, Jean Todt, difficult person though he may be, when he was at Ferrari, he protected the team. He let them be themselves. He let them take risks, do what they wanted to do. And not, you know, crucify anybody who made a mistake, which, and we have to see if that sort of the traditional Italian Ferrari is this sort of panicking and politicking and all the rest of it. And that's what we don't want to see. What we want to see is a Ferrari that is not panicking, not politicking, and is just working towards winning. And I hope we'll see that.
If you were a mechanic on the shop floor or a design chief in one of the design departments, would you rather be in Ferrari 2019 or Ferrari 2018?
Oh, 2019, yeah. No question. Ah, no, it's another world that, you know, they were so set upon in the last few years by the way that the team was run. It was just crazy, you know. It didn't make any sense.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We've got a question from Tibby Apples, which I'm interested in as well. For some reason, everybody's talking about the potential of Hamilton moving to Ferrari in 2021, or a story that he was close to moving to Ferrari in 2021. Joe, why has that made your skin crawl, that question?
Because it's ridiculous.
Go on, why?
Why? Because the whole thing comes from a question that Toto Wolff received from a member of Fleet Street, who said, I can't remember the exact question, but it was, you know, Lewis Hamilton could move to Ferrari, blah, 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 blah. And Toto said, yeah, he could move to Ferrari, but I don't think it's going to happen. And that gets turned into this thing. And then every kind of total beep picks up the story and turns it. Lewis Hamilton's not going to Ferrari unless he's gone congenitally bonkers. He is not going to Ferrari. He's going to stay where he is because he's winning. And he'll go on winning if he stays where he is. If you go to Ferrari, you can't guarantee anything. And wearing a red suit does not make a damn difference. And, you know, get real. Get with the program, folks. You know, you go to Ferrari to destroy your career. And that's been the story. And I'm sorry, but that's been the story in recent weeks. Years, rather. You go to Ferrari to destroy your career and make a load of money, not to win it. And it hasn't been winning. When was the last time Ferrari won a world championship? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just going to stay off the YouTube comments for a couple of days there, Joe. Always great to have you on board, though. Again, I've been enjoying reading your blog. One of the things I like to do a couple of days after the race is go and find your green notebook where you talk about your travels. So, like,
or orange notebook last week, yeah.
Oh, you can't change the colour of the notebook willy-nilly, Joe.
No, but I left the green one at home. You didn't read the last one, clearly. I left the green one at home and had to buy an orange one at the airport.
I normally read your race report after. I've been busy, Joe. Forgive me. But in Monaco, for this one, I'm certainly looking forward to catching up and reading about you chin-wagging with all the stars, seeing the selfies of you and Bieber, which I expect. Bieber's a singer. Who? Yeah, no, I instantly realised my mistake.
No, Bieber used to be a shop in Kensington when I was young, but I don't know, apparently he's a singer now. I don't think he was born when you've never heard of Bieber either because you're far too young.
I'm pretending that I'm the generation.
Bieber was the coolest place to be in the 1970s. Not that I remember them very much, but I was a sort of a snotty little kid at that point, and I remember Bieber was where the girls with 17-foot legs were always hanging out in their fancy flares. And chaps looking like James Hunt would hang out there. That was Bieber, you know. Who this Bieber local chap is, I guess he's got tattoos, does he?
Possibly. And just to say that at Mist Apex, we like legs of all lengths, not just 17-foot ones. Joe, you can be found by searching Joe Blogs F1. That's where people can get hold of your things, isn't it? And you have
It sounds very painful, actually.
You have an e-magazine, and what you do is you handwrite individual copies and post them to people after the race. So it's a slightly different model to the internet things. Am I not getting that right?
No. Grand Prix Plus is the fastest and most fantastic magazine there is in Formula One because you get it 6 hours after the race. It's 90 pages. And anyone who doesn't buy it is clearly, you know, missing something. You download it. PDF, you can print it out if you're old-fashioned, but you get everything you want to know about a race weekend, features. This weekend, obviously, there'll be a lot about Niki Lauda. There'll be the Monaco Grand Prix. There'll be other features in it. I don't entirely know because we kind of make it up as we go along. And, you know, this is a few days before the race, so we've got 98-odd pages blank. In fact, we have a total blank magazine right now. And on Sunday night at about midnight, you will have it. We might even have, we did a few years ago, we even had a report of the Indianapolis 500 when Alexander Rossi won because he was an ex-Formula One driver. We actually had a report about an hour after he won the race. We had the whole thing in the magazine, which was published. So, you know, that's the kind of thing. Now, if you want anything better than that, you know, tell me where you can find it. And it's cheap as chips, you know, a couple of beers and you bought yourself a subscription for the whole year.
So search for Joe Saywood GP Plus magazine. And if you order it, he will type your copy out individually, scroll it up, put it in a raven and send it over to you if he's not too busy catching up on Game of Thrones. And Joe, I assume we can all sign a petition to change the ending of Monaco if we want.
No, you can sign any petition you like, but it won't work. And I have no idea about why. I understand a number of people got upset about Game of Thrones. I wrote something about Game of Thrones. I know nothing about Game of Thrones. I said I know nothing about Game of Thrones. All I know is that apparently a bunch of people wanted to change the ending, which is daft, you know. Endings are what endings are. You know, Scarlett O'Hara getting shot at the end of Gone with the Wind probably wouldn't have worked, would it? You know, so whatever.
I enjoyed it. I tweeted that I enjoyed it. I think they stuck it with a pointy end. I'll just say one thing. Horses are for flanking. Employ someone next time who has played Rome Total War even once. But I digress, Joe. Honestly, Joe, it makes sense.
Are you talking about?
Just watch it. It's good. And then you'll know what all the cool kids are talking about.
Why would it be good? Why is it good?
She's just fighting and...
So basically, it's sort of porn with a bit of War of the Worlds or something, is it?
Pretty much. Joe, can we talk tracks?
You called
Zandvoort about 3 months ago. And, people do sometimes get angry with you for leaking things, a.k.a. Silverstone accusing you of fake news. But you were bang on with the Dutch Grand Prix. I am surprised as well. I'm surprised that Hockenheim and Barcelona are off the calendar next year. I'm not surprised now because it's sort of been building up to it and we've heard rumours. But at the beginning of the season, if you said that this was going to be the last year for Hockenheim and the last year for Barcelona, I'd have been a little bit taken aback.
No, not really. I mean, if you look at Barcelona, first of all, Alonso is no longer there. Alonso was the primary draw. But because Alonso wasn't doing very well at McLaren, the primary draw had ceased to be that good. The crowds were not good. The government is in all kinds of trouble in Catalonia and Spain. You know, if you read the news, you'll know it's a big political problem. And nobody wants to pay for it. Hockenheim, you can say, how can it possibly be? Mercedes are winning world championships, Vettel's at Ferrari. How can the Germans not care? And that's a really interesting question. But the fundamental bottom line of it is that the Germans don't care about Formula One enough to go and watch races. Now, if Mick Schumacher turns up in Formula One, apparently this will change everything. The name Schumacher doesn't mean that he's as fast as his father or his uncle, but apparently the beer-swilling, mullet-wearing fans of Formula One of the old days will be back if a Schumacher turns up. So who knows? But right now, both those races are dead. And we're going to places that are enthusiastic about Formula One in the modern world. You know, Vietnam is going to be completely bonkers, I think. And Holland, the Netherlands, as I'm always told to say, but the Dutch Grand Prix taking part in the Netherlands, otherwise known as Holland to the English, will be a massive hit. Will it be a great racetrack? Will it be this? Will it be that? You know, the Dutch are almost as negative in lots of respects, as Britain can be, you know, chuntering and blah, 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 not like it used to be kind of people, which is fine. But I think that's one of the reasons why actually I was just sort of saying, this is going to happen. It's going to happen because it's going to happen. It's logical. And all the Dutch people going, oh, it can't possibly happen because of this reason, that reason. Well, it's happening, folks. And, you know, it's great. And Zandvoort was a great place to go motor racing. There's nothing like Fritz and mayonnaise and some raw herring to set your hair on end. Not that I've got much hair left, but there you are, whatever. And I'm really looking forward to it. So, and it will be an orange country. The whole thing will be orange. And if you look at all the races in Europe these days, there's orange everywhere. The Dutch are going everywhere to see Max. And you know, it's all about Max. And races are all about drivers. So when Alonso disappears, Sainz is not in the same league. So the Spanish are not following Sainz in the same way they followed Alonso. The Germans are not following Vettel in the way they followed Schumacher. The Dutch are following. For whatever reason, the Dutch, even though apparently they won the Eurovision Song Contest, which is...
Was not a good song, Joe. was not a good song.
Tell me a song that was good in the Eurovision. Not that I know very much about it.
The Danish entry. You should watch it every year. You can come to our next Eurovision party. We have one every year.
Actually, I did see the Danish entry, and I thought it was just, it was Brotherhood of Man on Coke.
Or Sleepy Lily Allen. But anyway,
Coca-Cola. Yeah. Coca-Cola. Obviously, I mean that. You know, obviously, it zips you up a bit, you know.
Yes, like this. Yes, see, there we go. I'll rescue you, Joe. Don't worry.
I don't need rescuing, you know. But no, I thought it was actually far too twee. But then again, isn't the Eurovision Song Contest twee? And incidentally, if somebody could please explain to me why Australia was involved in that, I'd love to know.
I think they're involved, but they can never win it. I think that's the secret rule.
No, but they're not in Europe.
Well, you know, Europe's kind of fluid at the moment, isn't it? Anyway, Joe, should we stick with... in fact, let's leave Europe and go to Africa. Why are we going to Africa? Why the push? And why is it in the news that F1 feels it needs to go to Africa? Is there an untapped African audience that F1 wants to tap into?
Yes. There is a huge audience. Africa is, in many respects, the continent that will develop most of all in the years ahead, commercially speaking, because there are the middle classes are emerging there faster than they're emerging elsewhere for various different reasons. I mean, obviously, Formula One wants to be in China. Formula One wants to be – actually, there's no interest at all in being in India, which is quite interesting given the population size. But Africa has a lot of interest, and Africa has car industries. You have South Africa, and you have Morocco. I think all the stories about Morocco are just a sort of hurry up for South Africa, because South Africa is the place where the Grand Prix will logically take place. And the recently elected president, brackets 10 days ago, Cyril Ramaphosa, is a huge F1 fan. And the reason I know this is because I met Cyril Ramaphosa when we were in South Africa a very long time ago and was so impressed by him that I wrote his name down in the book and said, I'll keep an eye on this bloke. And when he turned up as president of South Africa, I sort of wrote an article to that effect, saying, watch out, there'll be a Grand Prix. And then Chase Carey and Sean Bratches started to visit South Africa on a fairly regular basis. And I think that's where things will end up. But I think, you know, he's got some problems down there. It's a messed up country, but they need to sort out some power cuts and electric crisis. But once they've done that, I think that Cyril will organize a Grand Prix at Kyalami, and I think it'll be very successful. I understand why Morocco would want to do it. There's only going to be one Grand Prix in Africa. I doubt there'll be two. Although, if the money is good enough, there might be two. But I think that the country will benefit, either country will benefit from having Formula One, because it does terrific things for tourism, for image, all the rest of these things. And you only have to look at a number of Asian countries to see the impact, or even Middle Eastern countries, to see the impact Formula One can have in a positive way. And so they all recognize this and they want to see it happen. So I'm looking forward to going back to Africa. Formula One should be everywhere, apart from the Antarctic. I really don't want to go there. You know,
it's cold. But, yeah.
Yeah. You know, Nice is bad enough in May. We don't need the Antarctic too. So,
Joe, can we move to legal matters? Because I've had a bone to pick with Ferrari for a long time about logos. We've had that M for 6 years now, and Ferrari just swan in, nick our M, and plant it all over their car, and no one says a word. However, Rich Energy have a logo that looks a tiny bit identical to a bike company, and it causes chaos. I mean, that looks like a nailed-on case of someone going, yeah, no one will notice.
It's not identical, because there's a little extra horny thing.
Yes.
If you'll pardon me, I rephrase the term horny.
Yes, too late.
But too late, okay. But it's not identical, but it is very similar. And, you know, that's the way of the world. If you nick somebody else's logo, they sue you, you lose. So, you know, did they nick it? Who knows? Probably not. Maybe yes. What's the likelihood of them coming up with exactly the same logo? Not a lot. So, you know, let's face it. Anyone out there yet bought a can of this stuff? We have to ask the question, what the hell is going on? And I have asked the question, what the hell is going on, a number of times. And the Haas team very correctly said, we have bank guarantees the money is going to come whatever happens. Why would you turn it down? And to be quite honest, I agree with that. Why would you turn it down? If a bank will guarantee a sponsor, that means the bank will pay if the sponsor doesn't. So why would you turn it down? It's bonkers. So, you know, somewhere in the middle of all this, the bloke with a funny beard must have a product and must have a plan, must have this, must have that. But just get on and do it and stop messing about with getting your logo turned around and just produce some drinks. We all test and go, ugh, whatever, as we do with all energy drinks, or at least I do.
Tastes exactly the same as Red Bull. So I'll save anyone.
Well, people do tell me that it is actually Red Bull.
Oh,
In another can, which is allegedly. An interesting argument.
Yeah, we need to just say allegedly a few times and I think we're
covered. I'll just say allegedly five times. But I have been told that it, in fact, it's just Red Bull in another can with another idea, and God knows why they'd try it. But whatever. Because the other thing is, if you want to know about energy drinks, you just go to the tin can manufacturers and they'll tell you who's making the cans. And Rich Energy ain't making cans. Now, they might have had a deal to do 90 million cans with Red Bull's canning. So you might ask yourself, is this a sort of Mattershits pretending doing another Red Bull and trying to do another? Well, I don't know what the hell's going on. Whatever's going on, something's going on. But just get on with it and do it. That's my view. And if the logo's nicked from somebody else, change it.
Fair enough. Joe, I want to finish up by asking your opinion on some of the negativity that's flowed out of the last two races. I think Baku, it delivers when there's a safety car, and then we've seen for 2 years it doesn't deliver. And then people kind of had this, oh no, not again feeling when Lewis Hamilton was so far ahead and looked so comfortable out in the lead at Barcelona. Now, there's a normal background noise of moaning and negativity, but on the Sunday show, we were talking about Martin Brundle's column, where he wrote a very passionate article, and I think he's hurting from the negativity. He's been in the sport for a long, long time. I was just wondering, like, you know, you're of that generation as well. Do you share the grumpiness about what's going on?
No, not at all. Ah. Not at all. I see what Martin is saying. I don't agree with him. I have a much more positive view of Formula One in the future. I think we're going into good places. Right now, it doesn't necessarily fit with the grumpy old man audience that Formula One has. But the Netflix documentary, I've seen it myself. You walk around to the Grand Prix paddocks, and not the paddocks, in the public areas, and you see a different demographic. I can't necessarily quantify it, but I can see it. I see women and children walking around. You didn't see that. You just saw grumpy old men and their sons wandering around occasionally. But I'm seeing a change of the kind of people who come to Formula One, and I love that because it means that there is more of a future. But we should not be dictated by people who are trying to go – everyone who is negative is trying to go backwards to some great era. Did it ever really exist? Yeah, there were good years. There were bad years. But if you look back, you know, we heard the same criticisms when Red Bull won the championship for 4 years running. We heard the same criticisms when Ferrari won it for 6 years. We heard the same criticisms when Williams-Renault won it for 5 years. We heard the same criticisms when McLaren-Honda were winning it all the time. We heard the same criticisms when Williams-Honda were winning it. And you go back to McLaren Tag, and we're talking 30 years ago, and we heard the same criticisms. So, you know, come on. It's just the way the sport is. The difference is that the change but basically the waves of change, the interconnections, a team comes up, another one goes down. They take longer now because there's more money, there's more people, it's more of an industrial change. In the old days, you'd see the change in 2 years. Now you see it in five. And that's where we're at. Now, if they can and they must, bring about, a budget cap and simpler cars, just not wasting money on stupid things. And stupid things include motorhomes, to be quite honest, you know, all these silly things they spend money on. But brake ducts and gearbox cassettes and all this stuff, it can be standardized. Nobody will know the difference because the cars are fundamentally, one is fast because it's aerodynamically better than another one, or because there's more horsepower, All the rest of it's just a waste of money. And this is because engineers are engineers. And you, as an engineer, you'd know this. They are always looking for perfection. But perfection is not necessarily what you want in a sport. What you want in a sport is good competition. And therefore, having a budget cap, the best team's still going to win. Mercedes will still win if there's a budget cap because it's the best team. It's as simple as that. They are the best team. There is no question about it. Mm-hmm. And if there is a better team that comes along, and I hope to see that, I hope to see whoever. If you look at the facilities these people are working from, you know, you want to see Ferrari. We all want to see Ferrari do better, but they never do. You see Red Bull. They've got the potential to do it. There's a bunch of power there. Honda are really keen to do well. You look at Renault. You know, they're working their way forward and they're doing clever stuff, but you know, is it enough? You see McLaren, let's stop the blah 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 and get on to the serious stuff. You see Williams, disastrous. Racing Point, it says they want to do better. Great. Let's see all this stuff. Let's see it all move forward. Let's see it all work. Let's see the midfield competition, which is so tight, move to the front. Because right now we've got two or three teams ahead.
Yeah.
And the rest are fantastic.
To be fair, the chat room are being quite positive. So
good.
I mean,
good.
There's a danger, isn't there? Especially now with everyone having a voice on the internet, is that we get panicked and spooked by a very loud minority. But really, I mean, the last few years, we've had some really good racing, some really good Grand Prix. And you can't honestly tell me that a third of the way through the last five seasons, you knew exactly which driver was going to be the driver champion. No.
You didn't know at all, and it's silly to suggest that. And you know, yes, McLaren and Mercedes have won five consecutive seasons, but it was not easy, you know. And when they were dominant, and they were dominant at one point, when they were dominant, their drivers were fighting each other. And we've got that this year. You know, Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas, it's 3-2. And don't underestimate Valtteri Bottas. And, you know, and believe me, Toto Wolff will let them race because he understands that, yeah, if you let them, if you have team orders, the only time he's applied team orders in the last 5 years was once. And it was like a funeral after the race was over. It was terrible because it was like, We didn't, you know, we didn't want to do this, but we had to do this because Ferrari was so close to us. You know, Formula One is healthier than I think it's healthy, and it's been for many, many years. And I'm very, very confident and positive for the future.
Joe, you talked about the demographic changing at Grand Prix. One place the demographic isn't changing, though, is at an audience with Joe that you tend to put on where you will speak for a few hours.
Yeah, it's changing.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, okay. No, well, I'll take your word for it.
No, I get, in the last few years, I've had fans and I thought, wow. Where do these people come from? How is this? You know, why are these people coming to see what I have to say? The fact is that if you're a fan, it seems like they enjoy it. The fans enjoy it. Well, I don't know. I'm just talking, you know, whatever. I drink a bit. I tell some stories. Let's have fun.
So what Joe does is Joe sets himself up at a lectern with a free-flowing supply of wine. And you'll sometimes get through, you know, you're pretty sensible most of the time. You keep it to three or four bottles, don't you? But you're there, you hold audience for about 4 hours. And it is a great laugh because Joe will go into a lot more detail on stories and a lot more personal when the microphone is
on. And also I do impersonations too. But I mean, yeah, far bit from me. Equity would want me to give them a card or something. But
yeah, I know. Your Kermit the Frog is outstanding.
I thought my Ron Dennis was outstanding. My Frank Williams is pretty outstanding. You know, I'm, you know.
Rubber ducky, you're the one. Or was that Bert and Ernie? I don't know which one that is. Okay, Joe, thank you.
I have no idea what you're talking about, being a foreigner these days. You know,
so. Thank you so much for joining us here on Missed Apex Podcast. We love you hanging out in the shed, and we've loved hearing the sounds of Monaco behind you. And if you prefer, you can watch the video where you can see the sights of Monaco behind Joe or somewhere in that region.
The Tête de Champ, and very impressive thing.
Is that a real name? That sounds like I might have to beat that. Or was that just a foreign word?
No, Tête de Champ, dog's head.
Righty, I'll have to trust
you
on
that. It's the big rock thing. Just go. If you ever get down here, go up to the top of the Tête de Champ in La Turbie and look down on Monaco, and you just go, wow, because it is like, you know, in England, they have these sort of model villages and things, you know, where you have to look at it, tatty little things that they have in the old days.
Yes.
I don't know if they still exist, but this is it for real. You know, this is looking down on the world and going, oh, look, you can see the Ferrari motorhome. It's that red thing 2 miles away. And yeah, those boats don't look that big when you're up here. Believe me, you're up here with the gods. This is where Nietzsche came up with the idea of the Übermensch and the Untermensch. It's true. Nietzsche used to come here on his holidays, and that's where he came up with the ideas of being gods and people down in the real world. And so I'm up here at Laterbe feeling like a god, and tomorrow I'll go down with the Untermensch again.
Fantastic. Follow Joe by going on Twitter at Joe Sayward or searching for Joe Blogs F1. You can follow the show at Missed Apex F1 or me at Spanners Ready. Joe, I hope you have a fantastic weekend. I hope you do let your hair down a little bit, and I'm sure you'll be having one for Nikki as well over the course of the weekend. Guys, we'll be doing our Monaco race review at 8 p.m. on Sunday. Until next time, remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. Hit it, Bjorn.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.